History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there, maybe even right next door, that should not go untold. And one thing we've learned over the years is that they don't have to go untold. If we'll take the initiative to ask a few questions and perhaps more importantly, to listen patiently to what some of our more experienced neighbors have to say, we're going to end up with some understanding and perspective that we might not have developed otherwise. Our goal here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. We're going to get to know 92-year-old Leonard Blake of Whittier, California, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be touched by the resilient spirit that allowed him to overcome devastating injuries suffered as a teenager off of Okinawa in 1945. This is one of those that's sure to tug on your heartstrings a time or two, but his story is also part of a bigger picture that may open some of our eyes to some details we just weren't aware of. We've heard a fair amount of Merchant Mariners on this program over the years, and one thing you might remember was that statistically, serving in the Merchant Marine was more likely to cost you your life in World War II than serving in the Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, or the Army Air Corps. One out of every 26 Merchant Mariners during that time period was killed in action. That's almost 9,500 of the 243,000 who signed up. More than 700 American cargo ships were lost, and those who were injured or killed while serving in the Merchant Marine were eligible for the Mariner's Medal, but in general, not the Purple Heart, though there are at least 26 documented Merchant Marine recipients of the Purple Heart. As we move along through Leonard Blake's story, I think you're going to understand why I brought that up here at the beginning. We're also going to hear where the name Blake came from, because he wasn't born with it. Leonard was an orphan, and let's start with that. How old were you when you were orphaned?
As a baby. Yeah, I was adopted by an LAPD officer who really just took me in so he could keep his wife busy while he was out fooling around. So he left, walked out on this woman. She was almost blind. And,
oh, man.
And he walked out on her when I was 11 years old.
Were there any other kids in the home?
No, just me.
Just you.
I got a job right away, and I kept working. And I finally decided to... I won when I was 14. Well, I wanted to join the service, and so I tried to get in the Marine Corps and the Navy, and they all kicked me out because I wasn't smart enough to get a phony ID card. and I was 14 years old when I went to work in the shipyards up in San Francisco.
All right.
I hitchhiked up there and got a job in the shipyard at Kaiser Shipyards in Richmond, California. I lived on California. I got a room up in a rooming house, and I used to go down every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning and catch the ferry across to Richmond and go to work. I was a chipper. Tried to get in the Marine Corps and the Navy there and couldn't get in, and so I came back down to Los Angeles, and I was down on 6th and Hill Street, and I went to the Marine Corps and the Navy, and they kicked me out. And I saw a sign that said, "Join the United States Maritime Service. Serve your country." It was on 6th and Hill Street. And I went into the recruiting office, and he said, "Let me see your birth certificate." I said, "Well, here I go again," because I was only 15 years old, and you had to be 16 and a half for the maritime school. And he took my birth certificate, and he looked at it, and he said, "Yep, you're 16 and a half, just like that. I was 15. So that's when I got in the United States Maritime Service.
Let me ask you about, your earliest years as you're a boy. So you're orphaned as an infant. This family takes you in. And I think about kids today, and they all have these smartphones, and they have the whole world at their fingertips.
Yeah.
What was your world like as a boy in Southern California? What were some of the things that you did or saw or experienced?
Didn't do very much. I just went to school as long as I could, and then I finally quit. And I quit school when I was 13 years old, but I had jobs in restaurants and paper routes and stuff like that. I always tried to keep myself going. And the poor little lady that this man left while she was blind almost, and so I didn't want to bother her, and that's when I took off and went to San Francisco. And but when I came back and got in the Maritime, well, I just had a good time.
Let me ask you about, you know, because it seems like everyone I've met who was alive during this time has some kind of memory of December 7th, 1941.
Yeah, you remember that it was publicized over the, you know, Roosevelt was the president, and he gave a sounding speech, and it just made you want to go to war.
But you were very young at the time.
Yeah, I started trying to get in the service when I was 14. And didn't make it until I was 15.
But so here you are in Southern California.
Yeah.
You know, this LAPD officer has adopted you. Then he walks out on the family, so it's you and this blind mother, if I can use that word.
Yeah, she was my mother.
And you get this idea, hey, I'm going to leave and go up and work in the shipyard in the Bay Area. What possessed you to do that?
Oh, I had some friends, cousins and stuff that were working there in the shipyard, so I knew them, but I stayed in a rooming house. They lived up there, too.
And what kind of work were you doing there? Because I know how many ships, you know, Kaiser was pumping out.
Oh, I was chipping the welds on the floor of the whole ship. They called me a chipper.
So you just come through and clean them up?
Yeah.
And were there other kids your age doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were other kids working there.
You know, the other thing I want to make sure I touch on, you know, the years leading up to this, your earliest years, these are the years of the Great Depression.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
How did you experience that? Were you aware that this wasn't the way it was supposed to be?
Yeah, I was aware of it, but it didn't bother me. I still went to school, you know, and got disgusted with school and quit. But I always worked. I always had side jobs. I had jobs in restaurants. I had sometime that was the only meal I got was I worked in a restaurant one time washing the dishes at noontime. I'd get a meal, and then sometime that was the only meal I had for the whole day.
Mm.
But, yeah, times were tough.
So you're 14. When you go up to the Bay Area, you work in the shipyard, so you're helping this war effort. These ships are getting sent overseas.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough for you. You wanted to do more.
Yeah, I wanted to go in the Marine Corps or the Navy.
And you knew what the age requirement was.
Yeah, it was 17.
But you didn't care.
No, I kept trying. I'd say I'm hoping they'd pass me through, and they'd say no. And so I finally gave up there and came back down here.
So, and once again, the Navy, the Marines wouldn't take you, but you find with the Maritime Service, the Merchant Marine.
Yeah, the Merchant Marine, yeah.
They look at your birth certificate and say, yeah, fine, we'll pretend you're 16 and a half.
That's it, yeah.
Did you know how dangerous that job could be?
Not really. I just wanted to get into the war effort. I was a hot shell man on the 3-inch 50 forward on the Marianne Livermore.
But that wasn't your first ship.
My first ship was the SS John Constantine. I made mistakes all the way along. When we pulled into New York Harbor, after we were the only ship that made it, we had three ships leave San Pedro, and they were loaded with 2,700 ton of bombs on each one of them. And we were the only ship that got through to Calcutta with our bomb load.
What happened to the others?
They got sunk. We were the only ship that made it.
Now, when you say that, does that mean you witnessed that? You saw them sinking?
No, I saw I was on bow watch one night, and I saw a flash of light just completely light up the sky. We were one day apart, three ships that were one day apart as we left. And I saw the sky light up, and I knew it was one of the ships.
Hmm.
But then I heard afterwards that they were the other one had gone to. We were in Australia, and from there we were over to India. And,
well, when you see that flash of light, now, and as I understand it, you're three ships one day apart but following the same course to India. So you see that flash of light, you put two and two together, you know what's happening.
Yeah, we know.
And you guys are going to be passing through those same waters.
Yeah.
Does that make you wonder what's going to happen to you?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you're waiting for them.
And what were your duties aboard that ship?
I was an able-bodied seaman, and I was a helmsman on the ship. So the captain, he would let us take our shirts off and our hats, and we were on the flying bridge, which was an open bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'd steer from there, and then I never realized that I'd get sunburned all the time. And I got burned so bad, they say later I was in the hospital, and they said, were you ever in the South Pacific? And I said, yeah. And they said, how hot was it? I said, I remember it was 134. She said, you get sunburned? Yeah. I said, well, you were burned so deep that they're never going to get all the cancer out. At one time, they took my nose off and made another nose for me with this piece that's missing here. So that's how I wound up with that darn thing. It's in pain all the time.
On your ear, you're talking about?
Yeah, my left eye.
And did anybody on the ship know how young you really were?
I don't think so. Because the captain on the first ship I was on, he and the first mate called me in when we reached New York Harbor and wanted me to go to officer's training school. And I was only 16. I said, no, Captain, I want to go to sea. So that's when I got off that ship and went over to the Marianne Livermore. And when I got back down to, you know, San Pedro, that was my last ship.
Yeah, and I don't want to miss anything on the John Constantine, because I'm just thinking, I mean, here you are, a 15-year-old, and I've got daughters that are 17 and 14, so I kind of, I'm picturing someone, you know, one of their friends doing this, and you're out in a new adventure that I'm sure you've never experienced before.
Oh, yeah, I always have a lot of fun.
Well, what was it like? I mean, that's a long journey from Southern California to India.
Yeah, it was, I enjoyed it. I had a good time on board ship. We went ashore. We had a seaman's club in India,
mm-hmm.
and I used to take the Navy kids. We had an Navy armed guard,
right?
And we'd take the guys ashore with us, and we'd go to the Merchant Seaman's Club and take these guys. And when we got back to New York Harbor, the Navy kids that were on the ship wanted to take us to the Navy Club in New York. There were two kids and two of us, and two merchant seamen and two Navy men. We went down, and they tried to take me in the club, and they wouldn't let me in. And the two kids with me got bent out of shape and got in an argument with the shore patrol. And they arrested them and got in a fight with them and all that. So we just told them to say, hey, forget it, we'll just go and we'll go away. And they wouldn't do it. And then that's when I came back to California. I think I was probably the first guy that was ever thrown off a bus in Georgia. Rosa Parks was a... She was thrown off for setting where she wasn't supposed to set.
Yeah.
And I went back. I always, on a bus or something, I always went back to the back of the bus. And I'd sit on that back seat. And the driver stopped the bus and told me to get back up in the front. And I said, I like it here. And they threw me off the bus.
What were you doing in Georgia?
We were on our way home to California. We just came back that way. And one of the guys had a car, and he drove us back.
Because you were white, and you sat in the back of the bus that was reserved for African Americans.
That's right. It was funny. The two guys, one of the passengers and the bus driver, threw me off the bus.
And you had no idea why or what was going on?
You know, I asked, and they told me, you can't sit in the back of the bus.
Because out here in Los Angeles, you hadn't experienced anything like that.
No, nothing at all. You know, we were all just kids. I ran around with black kids and Mexican kids, anybody that was a friend, you know.
Yeah.
You never thought about that here in those days.
Did you have any Japanese-American friends in school or classmates?
Yeah, I did have Willie Hayashi. And Willie was all of a sudden disappeared. He took his whole family. They had a flower business down in El Sereno. And they took his whole family and put him in the detention homes.
Was that hard for you to understand why?
Yeah, it was. Because I couldn't understand why they do that. They were Americans.
Yeah.
And I just, after the war, I was working out. I went to, they told me that I'd never walk again when I got wounded. I shattered both bones and both legs. And I had, doctor said I had so many wounds I couldn't close all of them. The field surgeon, he said, we've got to take your legs off, son. And I said, no. You just roll me over there and let me die because I don't want to lose my legs. He thought a minute. He said, we'll see what we can do. And he promised that he wouldn't take my legs off. They put me to sleep, and I woke up, and I had casts on up to here all the way down my legs. And my wounds were all somewhat sealed up. He asked me, how am I doing? And I said, I worked in a hospital one time, I said, when I was 13, I think. And I said, I never saw red casts before. And he laughed and he said, you had so many wounds we couldn't close all of them. I was in the Navy hospital all the way back, and I had 9 surgeons telling me 9 surgeons worked on me, you know, from Okinawa back all the way to the United States. And every one of them told me I'd never walk again. They were trying to figure out a way to get rid of me. And so I noticed that my discharge from the Coast Guard, I was in the Coast Guard and the Maritime Service at the same time. On my discharge, it read the date I was wounded in the Navy hospital. I liked it there, in the one on Oak Knoll Naval.
Yeah.
And a nurse came in. She was the head nurse, and she had tears in her eyes. And she said, "We've got to move you out of here, Lenny. They say that you're not in the armed services." I said, "I'm not, because I always thought I was." They sent me to a public health service hospital. I spent the next 3 months, I think, there. And then I asked to get out of the hospital because they were giving me codeine, which I found out later that I was allergic to, and morphine. They were pumping morphine in me. And I asked to get out of the hospital, and the doctor said, "If you can get on crutches, I'll let you go." Because the Blakes came to see me, and their son was one of the boys killed on the ship. They wanted me to come and live with them. And I told them, if I can get out of the hospital, I'll come live with you. Finally, the doctor let me go. I had got the crutches, and I got it. One of the nurses took me to the train station, sent me back, and I went to live with the Blakes. They took me in, and they were like a mother and father to me, and they finally adopted me.
It's time for our first break, and if you're listening, you may be feeling like I am, that we need to find the rewind button and go back with Leonard Blake to 1945 to understand some of the details about what happened in that kamikaze attack aboard the merchant vessel SS Mary Ann Livermore. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos of the ship, of Leonard, even a short video with Mr. Blake demonstrating the extent of the injuries he suffered as a 16-year-old. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you're a business owner, I've got a phone number you really ought to take down. 800-989-1139. And when I say business owner, I mean businesses of all shapes and sizes, from the multinational chain to the hot dog stand on the corner, or my personal preference, the taco truck. 800-989-1139. Because you can have the greatest product or service in the world, the best business plan, the most capable workforce, and still not maximize your potential if you don't have a reliable, efficient, and versatile plan for processing payments. 800-989-1139. That's the number for my friends at Provident Payments, one of the fastest growing payment consultants in the country. Why is Provident growing so fast? Because they're committed to helping your business grow. 800-989-1139. That nonprofit you love that relies on donations? Provident can even connect you to a special software platform to streamline and stimulate giving. If you are ready to grow, give it a go. Go Provident today at ProvidentPayments.com or call that number, 800-989-1139.